Man, if I had a dollar for every time I had to start one of these intros with, "I know this isn't a horror movie, but hear me out," I'd have at least like $7. Not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things, but it's enough in 2024 to be able to get me a Whopper with cheese, which is nothing to turn your nose up at. Still, it must be tiresome to hear me repeatedly come on here to give you some song and dance or another in a futile effort to appease Shaggy and any of our more serious-minded listeners who are still laboring under the impression that we are a normal horror movie podcast. As much as I hate to disabuse you of any ill-conceived notions to which you might be clinging, we are not normal. We are drunk and horny, and we tend to cast a fairly wide net in terms of what movies we will discuss. Name me another horror movie podcast that did an episode on Bo Burnham's Inside, and I will concede the point, but I think we occupy a unique space in a very crowded podcasting field. All that being said, while I won't apologize for adding another tenuous edge case to the Fright Pub canon, I will try to do this less often, if only to stop hearing Shaggy piss in my ear about it. Now, where was I? Oh yeah, I know this isn't a horror movie, but hear me out. Yes, it's a Western, but so was The Wind. And yes, it's Tarantino, but so was From Dusk Till Dawn. And it's got DNA from John Carpenter's The Thing, Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, and Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. It's an ostentatious and overtly theatrical homage to the more cerebral horror films of the 1980s, and it has plenty of horror elements while still falling short of being a horror movie itself. So pull up a bar stool, pour yourself some coffee, have some of Minnie's stew, stay out of Sweet Dave's chair, and hammer the door shut with two boards, not one, as we discuss the provocateur filmmaker's horror homage from 2015, The Hateful Eight. Welcome to Fright Pub.
Horror movie podcast.
Did I get you?
Got me.
Sorry.
No worries.
Just getting it all over the guest.
I got that way.
All on the face.
I just get excited. I like having friends here.
I know. Good times.
It's good.
Good times. Welcome, everybody.
To Fright Pub.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to Fright Pub. And also, welcome back, special guest Joe.
Welcome.
Hey, what's up?
Joe.
Good to be here.
Joe.
Glad to have you back.
Joe.
Always a pleasure. Today, friends, we're talking about a controversial entry into the Fright Pub canon.
Yeah, what the fuck did you do this?
You know what?
I was wondering where it came from.
When I looked it up, it said Western Thriller, so I'm here for it.
Because it's a thriller!
Today, we are discussing the eighth film by Quentin Tarantino. It was very important for him. That you know that it was his eighth film.
Oh, well, because
Hero doesn't count.
It is
The Hateful Eight. Yes. We don't know what they ate, but they did. Stew. We know they ate stew.
And coffee.
Yeah, well, that's something you drink.
So tell us about it, Liam.
Oh, am I going to tell you about it?
Why'd you put this fucking thing on the list?
There's so many horror movies that are not on the list that we don't cover.
Right.
And you're adding edgy,
should absolutely be on there.
What fucking... Our list is 700 films long.
Over
700 films. I know, because like I just added... I added like about 20 fucking films.
And at least 100 of those are just trauma now, too.
What I'm saying is that like we have so many, we don't need... to go over here and be like, well, let's have the conversation about Alice in Wonderland. She was scared. Woo, that Cheshire Cat's spooky.
Well, I'll tell you, and I'm a little sad.
Good.
That this got rolled now.
Instead of later.
What happens because later? A lot of the reason why this was added, I was reading a lot of articles a while back. That were like, I can read. That were like, is
so superior.
Like, hey gang, is The Hateful Eight a secret horror movie? And then like multiple articles were posing questions like that, and I was like, fuck it, let's find out. And so I put it on the list. Now the biggest argument in favor is that it's kind of a low key, if not straight remake, but an homage to
John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah, no, it's very much like the
like
game.
Like, it's heavily influenced
by
that.
The game Mafia, the game Werewolf.
So
somebody's
are you
a werewolf.
Bummed that we rolled it now and not after
I wish we had
thing.
Already discussed The Thing, because fair. A lot mm-hmm. of it has to do with that. But okay. basically, it's if you took the science fiction elements, the fantastical elements out of The Thing and set it in the Old West.
Is that why it's Kurt Russell?
But then what's yes. The Thing? Mm. The Thing is Kurt Russell?
No, Kurt Russell is the main is the main character of The Thing, and that's why
also the main character of this. They can't all be The Thing.
Yeah,
it's not like.
So then, what is The Thing though in this?
The Thing is
the gang.
Daisy yeah, Domer,
the,
dude.
Yeah. It's the There's not one particular thing. Kind of like there's not necessarily one particular thing in the movie, but they don't know who was trying to kill them.
So, basically, if you take
and then there were none, and The Thing. Smashed them together and set it in the West.
You have the Hateful
Eight.
If you did this exact same movie, except you made the bad guys werewolves, you wouldn't have to change really anything that goes on in this entire film. And you made me just think that just now. And so now I'm more in favor of it, and I don't like you.
I love you, though.
For you, that.
So that's cool.
For that, for you, because you did that to me.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Joe, what made you sign up for this one?
Well,
he wanted to hear Shaggy yell at me a lot.
Yeah. Well, always. Yeah, I'm an old school Quentin fan from way back, and I don't know whether that, you know, whether you justify that now with, in my 20s and my 30s, I love Quentin Tarantino, and then I got older and realized, oh, crap.
You know, way into feet?
Yeah, there's that. Hey, there was a surprisingly zero amount of feet in this one.
Very low foot factor.
Well, to be fair,
he made up for it with the other trope that he loves
when
to
we hang
jump
Daisy
on.
Daisy Domerdew, we see her feet.
Beating women.
Well, N word. Lot of
N
word.
Oh yeah, this is like.
Oh yeah, that's awful.
This is like, hey gang,
I get to now.
I bet you I can put more in this movie than I had in Django Unchained.
Yeah. Yeah. Awful.
And he did.
And he did.
And he went full on like, oh, I've got historical justification, so times 10, bitches.
I know. That's what? The hardest part is that like he just doubles down on this shit.
Yeah.
But, okay.
Yeah. I mean, Reservoir Dogs is one of my top movies out there, so I'm going to be in for any Quentin if I can get in there.
Okay.
And Tim Roth.
Gotta love Tim Roth.
I had such a hard time wrapping my head around her name because I think I
Daisy
was watching
Domergue.
It. Well,
Daisy
but Domergue. I was watching it with the subtitles on and I could not because if you look at it, like it's spelled like Domergue or whatever. Like it's G-U-E.
Yes.
Is how they're spelling it. And I was like, wait, how do you? I could
That's not
wrap.
Goo?
No, you're wrong. Goo. Django Unchained has 150 uses of the N-word. It is the number one. With a bullet, it is
I
only Hateful Eight is
say,
only the third.
This didn't feel like more than no. Django Unchained.
Yeah, but there's
to me,
but. The funny thing is that all of them are directed at Samuel L. Jackson
well,
in this
right,
movie.
Right.
So, like, number one is Django Unchained with 150. Number three is Hateful Eight.
What's number two?
Yeah,
Blazing Saddles.
Okay, that's, all right, that's fair.
Yeah.
Number four is
really?
Pulp Fiction. So it is Tarantino.
So you, yeah, go
What's
Quentin.
Number five?
In the Do top. The right thing. Do the right thing. Is
okay.
All right. Now
that one's fine.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that I accept.
Yeah.
Those are, if you look up movies with the excessive use of the word N-word.
Yeah.
On IMDb, those are the five that pop up.
So all three right. out of five. Quentin's rocking
three out of
that.
Five. Quentin, yeah. He's a huge fan.
Big fan.
And four out of five white people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Although Blazing Saddles... I mean, that's like the whole point of it is making fun of it.
Right.
Also, that was the only one that was made in the 70s.
I was going to say, I mean, I am more likely to give that one a pass because it was like...
I'm way more know, because it was but. It was doing it specifically for satire, not, you know,
yeah.
the historically accurate, I just want to angle.
Right. Plus, you had the Richard Pryor contributing
yeah,
writer.
Richard Pryor was a writer on it. Yeah. Was going to star in it. Yeah. And also... The euphemism, the N-word, had not been invented yet.
Right.
Right.
So.
Right, yes.
What's everybody drinking? Don't all answer at once.
No, I'll go.
I'm sorry, I'm reading an article as we speak about Sam Jackson's feeling about how Django has the most use of the N-word 150 times. right? And they asked him on IndieWire, they asked him like, hey, listen, what's going on with that? And Jackson said, it's some bullshit. When we did Pulp, I warned Quentin about the whole inward storage. I was like, don't say inward storage. He's like, no, I'm going to say it like that. And we tried to soften it by making his wife black because that wasn't originally written. But you can't just tell a writer he can't talk, write the words, put the words in the mouths of the people from their ethnicities, the way that they use their words. You cannot do that because then it becomes untruthful. It's not honest. It's just not honest. He added that he often adds more uses of the word himself beyond what Tarantino has written on the page. I generally add like at least five N-words to what Quentin has already written just because I'm talking, the actress said. I mean, that one sentence to Chris Tucker and Jackie Brown, I hate to be the kind of N-word that do an N-word a favor and then bam, hit the N-word up for a favor in return. But I got to be that kind of N-word. It's just one sentence. It's like, boom. But wouldn't Ordell say that? So, yeah. And that is me saying...
I really like that, that's really interesting to hear. That's
so like apparently they were like, yeah man, Samuel L. Jackson, how do you feel about that? He's like, dude,
it's fucked up.
I do, it's fucked up, but I add even more.
Yeah. I love everything about that.
You guys have probably heard the story about Leonardo DiCaprio on the set of Django Unchained.
Which one?
This is every day the
one where he was having a really hard time on set saying the N-word.
Okay.
And he was like kind of holding up production because he was so apprehensive about doing it. And Jamie Foxx was like trying to talk him through. He's like, hey man, we know it's not you. We know it's the script. Nobody's going to be offended who's on set right now. Like, we all know that you're playing this character, and like really trying to you know, ease him through it. And Samuel L. Jackson comes up and says, motherfucker, just get on it. This is every Tuesday for us. Like, you're holding us up now. Just say the word, and really let him have it.
I think if anyone's allowed to give you the actual pass, it's Samuel L. Jackson. I think if like anyone else tries to give you the pass, it's like, no, I don't believe you.
I think both of them saying that to him is like super helpful. And I, you know, props to him for having trouble saying it. I think that's like, I love all three of them for that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's
there's not a bad guy in that story.
It's Quentin Tarantino. The bad guy is Quentin Tarantino for being a white motherfucker writing this shit. You know what
really
I mean?
Okay,
but that's cool. I've liked all these stories.
Dope.
I'm drinking sticky beans.
Why sticky beans?
It's a coffee stout.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's 10%.
I think we all went that way.
I'm already feeling
it. Did we all go that way?
But yeah, I was going to make coffee and put some whiskey in it, but I don't really like coffee. But you know what? I really like coffee beer for some reason. I don't know. There's just
it's delicious.
There's a taste to it that
nice.
It tastes like coffee beans, but it doesn't really taste like coffee. I don't know. It's hard to describe. But I really like this. I don't even know who this is. I don't know. There it is. Evergreen. Never heard of
Evergreen.
Them before. But yeah, sticky beans. Like, I haven't really figured out a way to
Elven Brewery.
loop that in. I guess like the beans were sticky and they were killing people.
Beans.
But like, it was a sticky situation. The beans, the coffee beans were fucked up.
I mean, mine's a huge leap too. So
yeah, that's where I went. Sticky beans, coffee stout by Evergreen Brewing. It's good.
So I was also going the coffee route. So I figured I'd want a nice, you know, dark stout. And then I saw Unicorn Farts After Dark. from Duclaw Brewing, and I was just like, well, shit, I got to get that. And this is my extremely loose tie. It apparently has gold glitter.
Delicious.
So with Ennio Morricone's Symphony of Gold, all right, I'll go with that.
All right, I saw there that one go. When yeah. I was...
I like that.
I have from Voodoo Brewing.
Dope.
Out of Meadville, PA.
Hometown, baby.
This is their coffee stout called Grindin'.
Hmm. Like grinder?
Yeah.
Extra penis in that?
Extra penis in that. this is proudly featuring local Market District house roasted coffee.
Like Giant Eagle?
Yeah, like Giant Eagle.
Oh, nice. Fun. Yeah.
Let's go. That's fun.
Good? Yeah, it actually is really good. It's tasty.
You have coffee.
I came from my corporate job and went to corporate Starbucks and then poured corporate Jim Beam in this. So I'm having coffee with whiskey.
Brilliant. There you go.
That's it.
We're all on brand here.
Brand.
I mean, there wasn't much else to do, right? I mean, like, what else?
I don't know. Probably something wildly inappropriate, like some blowjob themed
Fair.
Yeah. Well, my drink's called the N-word.
Right.
Voodoo has Big Black Voodoo Daddy. I almost went there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Dingus Brewing.
Well, and like, I was kind of, when I was looking, I was like, okay, the coffee stout's my backup, but I'll look for like, I don't know, some sort of Western theme. I mean, I guess we could have done like a West Coast IPA or something, but that doesn't feel quite right.
So
anyway, I'm happy with my choice. It's 10% though, so
nice.
Always good.
So and I've been having a hard time staying awake lately. I don't know. I've been very tired lately, so hopefully
that 10% is going to help a lot.
This one's 9%.
Well, so but it's coffee, so maybe there's
the whiskey I poured in this was 40 proof. So I'm not sure what percent my coffee is right now, but I'm feeling it.
Excellent. Excellent. So this was none of our first time seeing this movie, right?
It was my first time.
Oh, it was your first time seeing it?
Yep.
Oh,
I had excellent. Not seen this movie.
Did you know much about anything about it going in?
I knew it was Tarantino. So cool. I usually, honestly, I try to stay away
from
Tarantino's Westerns because, well, no, I guess I try to stay away from Tarantino movies because the more recent ones, I don't like all the use of the N-word and stuff like that, so...
Well, I highly recommend Once Upon a Time in Hollywood then.
Oh, I love it. No, I love that movie, actually.
Because that has zero.
Yeah, I love that movie, actually. And I really liked From Dusk Till Dawn. So, I mean, I did not dislike this movie. I don't dislike his movies. I just don't really seek them out to watch them. Yeah. But yeah, I did really like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That was really good. Yeah. So this was my first time seeing it. I did stay awake for this movie. I did not fall asleep for this movie.
Which version did you watch?
I watched the one on Netflix. It was not the extended.
Version.
So we pulled up the extended thing first on Netflix, and it's like 4 episodes.
Yeah, so they basically took the movie and broke it up into each of the 4 chapters.
Okay, is
and
an episode.
Had them as an episode.
Which is perfect because honestly, like the fact that we had actors playing slightly different characters in each episode was a little confusing to me.
Yeah.
What?
What I mean is that the Sam Jackson that like goads the Confederate general into drawing a gun so he can kill him by talking about how he may or may not have killed his son. By the way, quick vote. Did he in fact do all that shit he said to his son?
I don't think so.
No?
No.
I'm voting yes.
Okay. So I see both ways, but I do vote yes. But I do want to mention that too, because there were a lot of lies in his story. Well, not a lot of lies, but I think there was at least one big lie in his story.
The Lincoln letter.
Well, that wasn't that specific story. I mean, yes, he lied about that too, which is true. But I think he lied about Minnie hating Mexicans. I think that was a big lie.
Mm.
Because they showed up and there was no indication that she had any sort of prejudice toward Mexicans. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, at all.
So I do feel like there is the defense that the whole story is a lie because we have established with the Lincoln letter and that Minnie hates Mexicans that those were both lies.
Right.
I mean, I guess it could have not been a lie, but I feel like the fact that they showed up, there was no, like, she did not change her demeanor at all, was kind of just pointing to the fact that, like, yeah, he lied about that. So, I mean, there's definitely the pretense that he lies a lot, you know? So the whole story could have been a lie. I took it for truth because I tend to do that because it's the path of least resistance, right? But... but I think that there's definitely an argument in that it was all a lie.
Right. I think he lied.
Yeah.
I absolutely think he lied.
I think so. I mean, you know, there's certainly an argument both ways. You know, where the truth lies, who knows?
Yeah, I think it's fun to think about. I don't know if Tarantino has an answer definitively on whether or not he told the truth about that.
So, like, the thing for me and the reason why I think they changed characters, right, is if you do take this as episodic, if you're like, all right, this is one. Here I meet Kurt Russell, the Hangman, and Daisy Domergue, and that weird Confederate guy. What was his last name? It's not Pickens.
Mannix.
Right.
Chris Mannix.
So we've got Mannix, the Hangman, Sam Jackson's character, Marquis.
Marquis. Yeah, it was like, Marquis. Yeah, that was another thing that I was having trouble with.
I was really consistent on the name. I probably should have done the subtitles.
Right. So yeah. Marquis, the Hangman, Dahmer Goo, and Mannix are who they are, to the point that the actor playing Chris Mannix kept playing the same note continuously through his
monologue. What's his name? Walter Cog?
Walton Goggins.
Walton Goggins.
Love right. him. So, love him.
Hell so, of a name.
Oh, yeah. Right. Great actor.
Specifically for like a skinny southern dude. Like, I'm Mr. Goggins. Like, that. Yeah. That's perfect. But the fact is, he kept playing the same notes. He didn't have a lot of range in his performance. But he had a lot of range outside. He had tons of range outside of the first chapter. So you see him at any other chapter, and it's like, oh, this is a three-dimensional character. And then you put
You all got me talking politics.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't mean to do that.
Right, like he's fucking like, he's like Paul Lynde, like, welcome to Hollywood Squares. I'm going to tell you about the Confederacy. Like, that, like fucking what the fuck is that? And then all of a sudden he's a three-dimensional character to the point that like at the end, he's like, all right, no deal, you fucking two-timing bitch. You tried to fucking kill me. Me and Marquis back here are going to hang your stupid ass. Like, even though we're going to die, fuck you. I'm with him. Like, and I'm like, let's go. To the point that, like, okay, Law and Order and Justice for this guy is more than his own. He values that more, like, maybe close. But his prejudices are second.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fairly consistent Law and Order thread there the whole way through with him.
But the first part, he's just like, bang, 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 bang. I'm gonna tell you all this horrible shit. I'm a horrible person. I'm the villain here. I am absolutely the villain here. And then, like, Marquis immediately gives him a gun, immediately at another time. And it's like, oh, shit. Well, all right, here we are. Sam Jackson, Marquis, in the first part, is like, I'm a bounty hunter with a noble spirit. However, we're talking some mad shit on me and what I have or haven't done. So I do have a checkered past, but I still have a letter from Lincoln. And so therefore, you don't know who I am. We get later on, this dude's a piece of shit. This dude likes killing because he likes killing. Like, this person enjoys to murder, like, and gets paid on it.
There are a lot of people in this movie that enjoy to murder.
No, I get it, but none of them are presented as, like, I had a correspondence with Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right? No, like, he's definitely got, like, he puts up an interesting front.
He does, and then it's like, oh, this dude's just as awful as everybody else, except he gives the gun to Goggins. Also incredibly questionable. Also kind of a piece of shit. However, there's no everybody in this except for, I don't know, that sweet-ass Aussie-like horse driver. Wow.
Yeah.
Who was also in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Good Lord, I had a crush on her.
Yeah, she was gorgeous.
Wowzers. Yeah. Like, but and the fact that she was skipping around with the Australian accent, I was like, I want to know who you are.
Or New Zealand, I think.
Sure. New Zealand, right.
I have no idea. They all sound the same to me.
I think she said she was from Auckland.
She did. Yep.
Yeah, I'm from Auckland, so I'm from New Zealand. Right.
Yeah, she was adorable. I agree.
Oh, my God. Just put her in your pocket. take her home. But yeah, no, Sam Jackson later on turns out to be an absolute piece of shit. And it's weird. There are no good people.
No good people.
In this movie, except for Minnie, Sweet Jake.
Yeah, I was going to say, all the people they kill. Yeah.
Obi.
Freaking Obi, yeah.
Obi's a good guy.
Yeah. I fucking love Obi.
Well, but I mean, and none of them are the Hateful Eight, right?
I think Obi is one of the eight, right?
No, he's not. Because I was working.
We've got Grouch.
I was going through this.
Dahmer Goo. Dahmer Goo's sister. I can't Dahmer say it any Goo. Other way. The Dahmer Goo.
So we got Dahmer Goo, but it's her brother's Obi. Name. It's her brother's Mike. Name is not
Dahmer Goo.
Jody. Dahmer Goo.
Yeah. So Daisy, Jody,
the Grouch.
Which one's the Grouch?
He's the one that is either the Grouch or Joe Gage.
Madsen.
Michael right. Madsen. Tim Roth.
I thought Obi was, but he is not. Tim because Rush, if you actually go through it all,
English Pixton or something.
And then
Joe the Mexican.
Yep. Yeah. Bob
the Mexican.
Senor Bob. Samuel L. Jackson.
The Hangman.
And I guess that would be
Goggins.
So wait, is friggin' Bruce Dern is not one of the eight either?
Hold on. No, he's not. Because he's the one, they find him.
Yeah, he's kind of a piece of shit too, though.
Yeah, so he's not. So it's Marquis, John the Hangman Ruth, Daisy Dahmer Goo, Chris Mannix, Senior Bob, Oswaldo Mabray, Joe Gage,
Oswaldo Mabray,
and Jody. Those are the eight.
Right. So those are the eight. Everybody else that dies, you're like, fuck, that's a shame.
Can I tell
these
you...
These people, I'm glad all of them die. I'm glad literally every single one of them die.
Fair. Why Tim Roth is the best part of this movie.
Mm.
Because he is the only one that realizes in his performance how fucking dumb this movie is. And I love it.
Like, I love that.
Like, every scene, he is just like, I'm in a piece of shit! The movie's not that bad. But, like, he is, like, really playing up the fact that he is in a shitty movie. And I enjoy every second of him just really cheesing weirdly for the camera.
It's great, actually.
I mean, he, like, does the thing that short-circuited my brain is, like, wait a minute. Why did you bother doing a standard English accent? And then go to, you're actually Cockney. None of these fucking people are going to have any idea of the difference.
I think that's, I actually like that a little bit. It adds nuance to a character that's going to be like, to be honest, a throwaway. Like Joe
pretending
Gage.
To be Christian Bale.
Right. Like Joe Gage and all these people are throwaways. Like they're all like, I am literally here to eventually be killed.
I have to There's tell you, no have reason. I have I told you my Christian? Sorry, if I told you my Christian Bale story,
I'm
like
ready.
That, like I never knew how that man actually talked because he Welsh. Is always speaking in a different accent. Like every movie, he is never talking in his real dialect. He never is. And then I heard him do his. What did he win the Oscar for?
The Fighter.
One of the most recent was The Fighter. You're right. I finally heard him do his acceptance speech and I was like, dude, you can talk any way you want. And that's it? Like, that's the one you go with? I was like, because it was
like, you don't have your own voice anymore. You can like, pick whatever
just,
you want.
It sounds, and I mean, granted, I'm from Pittsburgh. I am one to talk. The Pittsburghese comes out every once in a while, but it's just like, he just sounds, it's just like, it is not an attractive dialect. What he has is his natural voice. I'm just like, dude,
nothing against, like, nothing against the
pick
Welsh.
Another one.
It's not even Welsh. It's like this
it's,
weird
It's a
British.
Weird Cockney Welsh. It's so
I think
weird.
He's just
it's
lost
like,
who he is along the
maybe,
way.
I mean, maybe, maybe. Okay, sorry. I'm going to take us back to the movie.
Sounds good.
Because I have a question.
Shaggy's got feelings.
I have a question.
Therapy.
Was it chapter 3 where the narrator just showed up?
Suddenly, yes. Out like, of nowhere. It's Quentin himself, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, narrated by
okay,
Quentin Tarantino.
I was
Tarantino.
Wondering about
yeah.
that.
Of course he's going to shoehorn his own fucking self. You know what? The extended version of this, I said this to you before. The extended version of this should have just been the normal movie and then 15 minutes of, like, we open up on a chair in front of a fireplace and then Quentin enters off left, sits down and says, hello, I'm Quentin fucking Tarantino, N-word. And this is the extension of my movie, The Hateful Eight. And then he disrobes his robe and begins to jack off just immediately. You don't have to see the penis, but like, bang, he's going nuts. Like, you know, rubbing a dish out just like right below the camera. Just rubbing that dish, drying it the fuck off with the hand towel. And you can't fucking see him dry. And then, 15 minutes later, a large foot is shoved on screen from stage right, and then he goes, written and directed by Quentin Tarantino. That's the only way this fucking movie deserves an extended edition. It was 2 hours and 55 minutes. Why?
Okay, hold on. I want to come back to that. But, okay, but about the narration.
So I will... He's not opposed to throwing narration in the middle of a movie.
Oh, good.
Apropos of nothing.
It's so weird.
The two people that he normally gets to do that were already in the movie. Usually it's either Samuel L. Jackson or Kurt Russell.
Well, I didn't think, like, I thought actually, like, what he brought to it as a narrator, like, I thought it was good. I thought it was, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, like, the way that he was, the way that he was pitching it or whatever. But it was very, it was just so, it took me out dramatically to have it come in. And maybe it's because I haven't watched enough of his movies or whatever, but, like,
It pulled the emergency brake. Like
it did, yeah. And it just felt, yeah, it felt like up until that point, I don't know how to describe it. It was like, did it negate the rest, like the first half of the movie, like, because it felt like they were.
It was completely masturbatory.
It felt like the scene in Magnolia where, for some reason, we start to explain why the man jumps off the building at the same time a shotgun is going off. There's no reason to do this. You could have just, you know, let the images on the fucking screen tell the story for you.
I mean, yeah, but in
the,
that's
what you did for like the first Magnolia.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, yeah, no, that threw me off. That's why I fucking hate Magnolia.
But Magnolia's great.
Okay, it rains frogs.
Add
and
that
Magnolia.
To the list.
No, fuck you. Absolutely not. Piece of shit. There's already enough horror movies. We're not gonna get to these edgy fucking. I don't know.
Do Crash too. Just throw Crash on there.
No. Is the Seventh That's Heaven made for do. TV movie horror? Maybe. What I'm saying is that like a filmmaker could in fact use images on the screen that he has full power over,
well,
like a weird visual god. To tell the story of the narration.
And I think, like, what Joe was saying, like, that's how the first half of the movie is.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly what you would expect.
All of a sudden, and that really bothered me. And, like you said, maybe that's the thing that he does, but I did not like that. I was like, I was fine with it. I did not mind the narration. I just wish that if that was what we were establishing, like, or if that was what we were going with, we should have established it earlier. Like, just have it from the beginning. Like, that's fine. But that, and so it was that narration, and also, like, the soundtrack was all over the place to me. Like, I went from, and I feel like that's the same kind of, I had the same sort of feeling about both. I had the same sort of feeling about dropping this random narration in chapter 3 as I did with like having the white stripes at the beginning of the movie and then this amazing like instrumental stuff. So I was just so I mean, in a way, I guess that tracks.
Yeah, no.
But this... also like I hated both of those things for the same reasons.
I get it.
I mean, there is that track with Quentin's career, like as his more recent movies have gotten like severely anachronistic. But it's, you know, it's fine. It's fine.
How many times do you watch someone suck their own dick before you're bored?
Yeah.
How right, many okay, times? Right. The yeah. first so, time you're like, wow, you can do that? The second time it's like, hey man, you got to see this. The third time it's like, yeah, no, I've kind of seen it, but I guess I'll watch it again. I really kind of, maybe I'll pay attention to the nuance. The next time you're bored, and then after that, you're just like, all right, I'm so bored that whoever is sucking his own dick has started dressing up in different costumes. Now he's in a 70s outfit. Now he's in a Western outfit, sucking his own dick.
And the other thing, too, is he started with Hitler Lives.
Yeah.
Or killing Hitler. I'm sorry. He started with killing Hitler outside of history. So like, exactly. My brain's not working.
You're
but
good.
Yeah.
No, I knew what you meant though.
When you start with that, there's not really anywhere else to go anachronistically. It's just like, wow, you did something out of time. Oh, great. But you didn't kill Hitler again.
Not talking about Inglourious Bastards specifically because it's not the Tarantino movie we came to talk about, but
that could be a
just
add them all to the list.
That is a good example of when I see him do this kind of thing normally, there is a reason. There is some kind of setup for it that like that is going to pay off, not plot wise, but stylistically by the end. So like there's a slow trickle of silly things that get added into Inglourious Bastards along the way. And it starts with Christoph Waltz's giant ass pipe in the first scene that just looks absolutely absurd and ridiculous. Like the pipe as a metaphor for big dick energy. That's hilarious. And you can kind of just like skate past that. But then there's a random bit of Samuel L. Jackson narration, and then there is a Mike Myers cameo, and it's just all of these things to pepper along to let you know that shit is going to, and then there's like a big David Bowie number, you know, and then by the end you've been slowly eased into the idea that they're actually going to fucking kill Hitler in this, and you're gonna get to see him take a machine gun to the face.
Okay, that was fun.
Yeah, right. You know, Django Unchained in a very similar way, like gets a little bit more cartoony in its violence the longer it goes.
Is that what he's doing? He's just like, okay, listen, they don't like my violence. I'm going to see how far I can fucking tune the violence up. But the more awful and incorrigible and horrible my people I'm killing are, the more I can tune it up.
Yeah, what happens in Django Unchained that I find is interesting is that the violence that's done to the slaves in Django Unchained is horrifically realistic and wildly disturbing. Whenever he's killing slavers, it's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, just spurting blood. Like, there is a distinct tone shift
right
between those two things. So, like, in
it's fun there, to kill slavers.
There is a context.
It's as fun he has, to kill Nazis.
As he has gone on, he has developed kind of a context for how he chooses to depict violence.
Yeah. Well, and it didn't necessarily have
in his early career when he was making Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown.
Right.
There wasn't any kind of like, I'm going to depict this violence like this and this violence like
that. And it was that grindhouse turn that he made too.
And like Kill Bill, there's not really any rhyme or reason to like who gets their violence depicted in such and such a manner.
Yeah.
So I got a little bit off topic there, but with Hateful Eight, I feel like there was a similar intention there. It just didn't work as well in this as it did in Inglourious Basterds or Django, because the weirdness of the payoff didn't quite get there. Mm-hmm. I think maybe it was to set us up for the jumping back in time and seeing how nothing is actually the way it's supposed to be.
Right.
I mean, maybe it's just to prepare us for Channing Tatum.
Fair.
Because when...
Who I didn't hate in this.
I didn't hate him in this either. But yeah. I didn't...
Look, kids, it's Lee Majors.
He stuck out when this came out. He stuck out more in this role than I think he would Fair. Now.
Yeah,
but like sure. if you're coming to it for the first time now, like Lauren is. Like,
why the fuck is Magic Mike there?
Yeah, when I was watching, I was like, that Channing fucking Tate. Like, I remember seeing his name in the credits 3 hours ago, but like, I had forgotten. So fair play. Yeah. I completely forgot that Channing Tatum was going to be in this. And I was like, that's
how you do it.
Why is Magic Mike here? But he now I've seen Quentin him in like.
Quentin Tarantino saw his feet in Magic Mike and was like, the rest is history.
That's it.
You know, now I've seen Channing Tatum do some different things. And so I kind of like him, but at the time I was like, what the fuck is this? How did this guy get into the Tarantino movie?
No, I think that makes sense what you were saying, because like it really, he did dial back the absurdity a little bit in this one. So it was much more of a straightforward, you know, I wouldn't call it a period piece, but like it's, the odd thing for me is I kind of felt like it could transition to a play really easily.
That's the thing. I feel like this would actually work better as a play.
Interesting.
Than it did a movie, because for some, and I don't know what it is, but for some reason, bigger performances, like over the top performances, like we get in this movie, all of these performances are over the top. Yeah. It's like they're all playing to the back of the house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So I feel like we have a lot more give and forgiveness for over-the-top performances on stage than we do in film.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. I want to get back to what you were talking about, though, a little bit about...
The masturbation.
Well, no, not that much. But like, written and directed by Quentin Tarantino. Okay, so The Hateful Eight that I watched... is 2 hours and 55 minutes long.
Yes.
I watched the original one.
Right.
Yes. There's not a whole lot of difference. Okay. There's not a lot of difference between the extended.
Why the fuck did they call it extended?
So there's probably like a little bit more.
So let me see. I'm going to look it up right now on Netflix.
Like at the tail end of the extended one, the curator of the Martin Museum has a little speech talking about how they had to, about how the guitar got destroyed.
Okay.
What?
Oh, you don't know that story.
No,
that guitar that he smashes.
Yeah.
He didn't realize this. He wasn't supposed to smash that guitar. That was an antique that was worth money?
Shit. Something like $40,000-$50,000.
Oh my God.
It was like a priceless ash, like 150-year-old guitar.
Which is why Jennifer Jason Leigh's
not acting.
reaction when she's like, whoa, whoa, what? And she's like looking around the room like, that's not Daisy Domergue. That is Jennifer Jason Leigh going, he's about to break that guitar, guys.
Yeah.
And then they cut away from her.
Yeah, apparently Kurt Russell was not aware that it was not one of the replicas that they had made. And he just grabbed it and went to fucking town.
Who pays for that mistake?
Insurance.
Insurance does.
So, I mean, you say that it's not that much, but I'm looking at it. It looks like the extended cut. So the movie I watched was 2 hours and 55 minutes long. The extended cut is like 3.5 hours.
Yeah. You know,
so it is like 35 minutes longer, so right?
That's, however, because they break because they break it up into episodes, quote unquote episodes.
Yeah, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes
they
there.
They play the opening credits over again at the start of each episode, which is like a long
Are you fucking kidding me?
Like the opening credits with the stagecoach and like you have the crucifix.
I mean, it's like 10 minutes.
It's like close
credits,
up on the crucifix and then it like slowly pulls back and then like comes down and then you see like the stagecoach off in the distance and it slowly gets right and then it goes past. Like that plays at the start of every episode. So there's at least 20 minutes
of that.
That is just that.
Okay.
Quentin Tarantino got high as fuck one weekend and watched all of Lonesome Dove and they got a bright fucking idea. That's, you know what? I stand on business.
So you watched the extended version, Liam.
Motherfucker.
Yes. You did too?
No, I went to Amazon because I killed Netflix off. So I rented it from Amazon, which was the full theatrical version.
Okay. We're about to kill Netflix off.
I've been killing a lot of things off.
We're not there yet, but
I bought myself a camper trailer, so I gotta rein it in a little.
Hey, let's go.
That sounds lovely.
Oh yeah, we're doing a little bit of camping this summer.
We're trying to cut back, and we're like, look at all these streaming services. Well, one's gotta go.
Yeah. Did you watch the extended cut?
Fuck no.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, it's honest to God not that different. Like, I don't think there's any like
they play
content.
The credits over again. I gotta watch the longest.
You can skip
back.
Them. It's Netflix. You can do skip
credits. They do skip intro. Yeah.
For each part. You can skippy skip.
Yeah, you can skip the intro.
Not the. You might even be able to the first one.
Well, because if it treats it like an episode, then
Wait a minute. So if I go to Netflix and I click on extended cut, it's going to give me episode 1, episode 2, episode 3, episode 4?
Yes. That's what it does, yeah.
It's not bad, right? It's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
A bad idea, yeah.
They should have done that with The Irishman.
Well, they should have done that with The Irishman.
Amongst other things.
So we watched this. I watched this. Today, what day is it? Today is Tuesday. We watched this on Sunday. If I had known that the extended cut in the episodes was an option, I would have started a long time ago and just done it like over the course of a few days.
You know what? If you break it up like that, it's not such a pain in the dick.
No.
I didn't mind it.
You know what?
Honestly didn't mind it.
So you're on board now, aren't you?
You
love this movie.
I did not fall asleep during this movie. And that is kind of like long movies. Like, I can fall asleep.
He keeps the pace moving pretty well.
I did have like a lot of caffeine that day, which I don't usually do. So that was probably helping me. But like, I did not fall asleep during this movie.
You know, it takes 12 hours for a cup of coffee to leave your body.
I think my metabolism is like ridiculously slow, so it's probably even longer for me.
Is that true? I kind of call bullshit on that.
No, it's okay.
Then why am I tired in the afternoon if I have coffee in the morning?
Well, here's the deal. If you have coffee in the morning, it does take 12 hours. However, the half-life is 6 hours, meaning that 6 hours from now, you still have half a cup of coffee in you. And then 9 hours from now, you still have a quarter cup of coffee in you, right? So like, imagine you took like a big sip of coffee like sometime in the night, and then you put it down. Would you still feel invigorated? No, you'd be fucking tired. You worked all day. You've had a quarter of a cup of coffee. And it's fucking, what? You had it at 8? Now it's 6? Like, you just fucking come home all day with no coffee and working all day, and then you have a quarter of a cup and set it down and go, ooh, I feel refreshed. No, you'd be like, what the fuck? I need more coffee. So that's why.
I think I understood that. I will say, though, this movie is 3 hours long, and we're still, like, having trouble, like, finding things to talk about.
Okay. I have something.
All right.
So, the hangman always brings his people in alive. He sounds bad at his job. because it fucking kills him, as it has killed many other bounty hunters in the past. In fact, his dumbass got a lot of other people killed too. Killing these people seems like the right choice every time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, but also, so the...
But isn't the job of a bounty hunter to bring them in alive?
No, not necessarily.
Dead or alive.
If it says dead or alive, then you get the bounty either way.
I mean, the premise being that he likes to watch them hang.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, it hasn't bitten him in the ass yet. Up until this point. Like, it's harder.
Well, it only takes one. Okay.
Right. But, like, he already has this, like, he's developed this career and reputation by this point.
Now he has to keep it up.
Yeah. So, but I mean, not even now he has to keep it up, but, like, this is the one that went wrong. Mm. That's why we're telling the story about this one.
Yeah, I think I was at a detriment because I don't really know, like, all the logistics of this stuff. Like, I didn't really know much about bounty hunters and, like, what that means, but...
But it's funny, so in the whole Tarantino-verse or whatnot, like, even if you're not looking at all the ways that the movies are in-world connected, because in a lot of ways they are, usually just with, like, characters sharing a last name and right. so on and so forth.
Yeah, not as much this one.
Well, no, except for there are some tie-ins with...
The tobacco.
So the red apple tobacco is in all of them, but the...
It's in every Tarantino movie?
It's in most of them, yeah.
It's because Kevin Smith also got the same idea from Quentin, because Quentin has the same cigarette line and everything, and then Kevin Smith does his nails cigarettes in all of his movies.
So is that where Simon Pegg and the Coronado trilogy comes from? Like, they have
distinct possibility it came after this. Yeah, I mean, like, it's a thing.
Got it.
But Coronados exist in real life,
right?
So they're an ice cream. Red apple tobacco does not.
Nope.
But in tobacco. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Leonardo DiCaprio's character played a bounty hunter in a Western on television who never brought them back alive. He always killed them.
Okay. Yeah.
Bounty law. And so, like, there's just, like, some weird things where, even if it's not, like, a direct connection to the other movie, just you can almost see, like, sort of in his head, like, how he's sort of reinventing ideas and not necessarily recycling them, but adapting them into his next movie and things like that.
Got it.
So we are at last call.
Last call.
It's the time. I said that weird too. This sticky beans is
sticky beans is sticking in your mouth. Sticky
beans is making my tongue sticky.
Yeah.
Hot.
Sticky for your pleasure.
Oh God.
I don't know. You're the one.
Just wipe the juice off the bunnies. Got those bunnies
the beans
from the
should
dump.
Not be sticky.
I mean,
so anybody have a last call?
I do.
Yeah, go ahead.
We all do. Okay,
great. We all do. So I'd like to talk about the period vernacular of penis. Dingus is correct. Dingus and Johnson, attorneys at law.
I don't think Johnson. I
could buy.
And I don't think Quentin Tarantino is, like, going to the library and, like, looking up
Dingus.
Looking up, like, appropriate.
I promise you, if he was going to actually do any research
in chapter
on
3,
anything.
Like, I don't think he cares about.
And I got to wonder if, if the origin of Dingus. Ed, now this is having,
ooh, etymology of dingus.
Well, you have Dingus Day from the lovely Polish people.
Saint Dingus Day?
Saint Dingus Day.
Oh, wow.
That's the one where
hear that, Brian?
You get squirt guns and spray the ladies, and the ladies get to hit the men with pussy willows. It's so weird.
Yeah,
ass,
they do.
It's a weird ass fucking day. The BBT used to have a great Dingus Day, I have to say.
Got it.
I mean, dingus
the meaning of dingus
like,
is
that feels appropriate.
The actual plural meaning of dingus is an often small article whose common name is unknown or forgotten, like gadget
article.
Or doodad. Also a dim-witted, silly, or foolish person, often used in a joking or friendly way, a dingus. It's originally from Afrikaans, which got it from the Dutch.
I've
dingus,
also
meaning thing, the ding.
Yeah, I've also heard dingus. For dingus not reference the penis before, but it is used in some old pulp film noir kind of references, like Sam Spade in The Maltese Falcon usually refers to the falcon as the dingus. Like, the thing you're after, the dingus.
Oh.
So you think the dingus is worth $1 million, huh?
The dingus.
Never heard it that way.
Crazy. Crazy. So yeah, that's my thing. He never calls it
a cock or a dick.
Any of that stuff. It's just dingus and Johnson.
I mean, according to Deadwood, cock is the preferred nomenclature.
Oh, this is interesting. So this says the 19th century, but dingus means a gadget, device, or object which is unknown or forgotten, or something which name is forgotten or does not wish to name.
The thingy.
It is originated in 19th century from Dutch and from Africans.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Anyway, I thought that was
this sounds a lot like the Britney problem.
The Britney problem?
The Britney problem. Have I told you about the Britney problem?
No, tell me about the Britney problem.
So, a very, very common name for princesses in medieval times was Britney.
Oh.
Right? It's okay. Britney, bitch.
But you can't call them Britney now because it sounds anachronistic. Right,
I can't have, and Princess Britney! Mm-hmm. Like, and then she would be absolutely period to call them Princess Britney, but no one would accept it. In the same way that, like, I don't accept Dingus and Johnson, even though it's probably accurate for the time period, in my mind, I'm like, I can reason that it's probably correct. However, Princess Britney, fuck that. We shouldn't use it. So the same way I have a problem with any sort of slang that they use.
Right. Well, and I don't know. Maybe it's because he drops narration in the third chapter, but I just give him no credibility. I'm sorry. Like, I just feel like nothing that he says, it's all just because he wants to do it. Like, it doesn't, I'm not giving him any credit for anything, but I mean, maybe Dingus is it. Maybe he did do the research. I don't know. It just seems like he just does it all because he wants to do it.
I mean, I guess I could see Joyce writing Dingus in the dirty letters he sent to his wife. Read those sometimes if you get a chance.
And wait, what?
James Joyce wrote a lot of dirty letters to his wife.
Yeah, but how fucking long were they? Did they just fucking talk about Dublin all goddamn day?
No, he did not.
Ulysses, like that's
the joke.
They were probably pretty long.
Yeah. Thank you.
And not understandable.
I just want there to be a letter bag that's like, I don't quite get the point, but if I admit I'm not turned on, you'll think I'm dumb. Like, that's
do you have any cliff notes for your sex text?
that's oh, literary jokes. Okay, next.
Lauren, what's your last call?
Yeah, what was my last call? I forgot it already. What were we talking about before this? We were talking about
Dicks.
It was
the old dick twist.
Come back to me. Somebody
Joe,
else.
Joe, what do you got?
Twisted dick. All right. So my last call on this, and this is the one nod that I will give to the idea that you can call this horror adjacent.
Who said that?
Calling back to From Dusk Till Dawn, Greg Nicotero. As the special effects supervisor on this, explodey heads, lots of lovely red, rich red puke everywhere. You know, so the effects were kind of fun, very horror like.
That's actually my favorite part of this movie.
Oh yeah,
is where it's just he's like, man, that was weird coffee. What's gonna blah, blah, blah. Where he just randomly. And I did not see it coming. He was just like, huh, I wonder what's... Like,
and then just, poor OB is just... At the same time.
Like, exactly. He goes to OB and he's like... And like, everybody's going nuts. And I'm like, wow, they're literally dying. They're throwing themselves up to death.
Yep.
Like, I'm pretty sure that there's no poison that actually does that.
That was my biggest fear growing up.
Puking to death?
Yep.
Is that why you scream when you throw up?
I don't. That's Liam.
I scream when I throw up.
That's right. You scream when you throw up.
I know we're hard to tell apart sometimes.
Well,
but...
it's your fucking Aquarius asses. Right.
Yeah, I absolutely scream when I throw up.
Which one's the Irish with the glasses? Yeah, no, doesn't care about you. It's the fucking, oh, God.
I care about everyone. Oh,
yeah, just pure
I care
rude.
So much.
Pure rage when you break their rules, thinks you should die if you've done something wrong to them.
Fair, okay. Oh, I think God, we might be a lot more alike.
That's tough. It's tough to call.
Which one of us is it?
The one who was raised Catholic.
Only one of us. The other one just has Catholic tendencies, even though she's Protestant. But I do not scream when I'm puking.
I do scream when I'm puking.
Have you ever tried it?
Maybe. You talking like the tail end? Or like
no, I mean the whole time just... like the whole time that the puke is coming out. Oh,
wow. Okay. But I do know, growing up, that was a huge, growing up, that was a huge fear of mine.
I'm thrown by that.
Why? That's a choice. You don't have to.
I mean, I get. Honestly not. Like, if I could not scream while throwing up, believe me, I would. But no, it's just like I turn into two anime kids running at each other. And I'm just like, like, it's
Akira! Kaneda!
I don't even know how that functionally works. Because for me, it's just like, it's like everything is just projectile. And then it's like, oh, after you like, then you get the yell.
No, the whole fucking time.
Wow,
the entirety. I don't know. It's not on purpose. I can't not do it.
It's got to come through your nose at that point because like your mouth is busy.
Yeah, my mouth is busy, but my vocal cords are still.
She said that.
Five stars. 100% functioning.
I don't know. I feel like it's got to be
like
a nasal
it basically
thing.
Just like. Amplifies my vocal cords.
That's hilarious. But no, I don't scream while throwing up, but it was like I spent so much of my childhood years just terrified that I was going to throw up every night.
Every night?
Every night.
Like Lionel Richie. All night long.
All night long.
Is that one of those things where like, because I remember being like really nervous about throwing up in my sleep when I heard that like Jimi Hendrix drowned in his own vomit. Like it was like, oh, that can happen to you.
No, like, it did not have anything to do with that.
That's sleeping pills and alcohol.
But yeah, no, I understand. But nobody told me that when I was six. Thanks.
I think it stemmed from anxiety. I think it stemmed from anxiety. And the way that my anxiety would manifest would
anxiety?
Be in stem. Oh, you don't know this about me? Okay, you're laughing. So clearly you do. But so.
You seem so low strung.
Low strung. But no, so like my anxiety would manifest in stomach aches. And so I think I just constantly had a stomach ache, and I just always thought that that meant that I was going to be vomiting.
I think that's the most insidious part of anxiety.
I'm sorry, was that your last call, or was that off of Shaggy Riffing?
That was off of Shaggy Riffing. My last call, I remember. Are you finished? I'm sorry.
I'm good. It's all you.
I think this came from Joe. Oh,
okay.
But no, my last call was, and I think I know the answer, but I want to talk about it a little bit because I thought it was a little... confusing to somebody who like doesn't know Westerns or Tarantino or like the lingo of the world.
Or Tarantino
but
Western.
So there was the Hangman.
Right.
Which is
Oswaldo Mowbray.
No, not him.
The Hangman
his professional name. Yeah.
There was the Hangman. What
nom
was
de
it?
Whom?
Who was the hold Ruth. On, I'm sorry. Ruth, yeah.
Yeah
John
yeah.
Ruth?
No John Ruth.
John the Hangman Ruth. So he was the Hangman.
He was known as the Hangman because he always brought you back to hang.
All right, that's fine.
Okay, but...
Oswaldo.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking right now. I can't, like, listen to people when I'm thinking.
No, don't.
But...
That's why I never listen to people.
So there was the Hangman, but then he went... Yeah, so then he saw all these other people... And there was another Hangman. Well, so, like, it's a thing.
Think of it as, like, the executioner. Like,
right.
That's the executioner was the person who would do the actual hanging. And they called him the Hangman.
So he actually hanged them.
John Ruth would not actually hang them.
Okay.
As Waldo Mowbray would do the actual
thank
hanging.
Thank you. Okay, I'm glad I went into this. Okay.
His monologue talking about the functioning of the justice system. And
okay, yeah. I'm glad we did talk about that.
Stop
because
being
I was,
an executioner.
Okay, so there aren't like multiple hangmans for like multiple municipalities, like necessarily, right? Like it was like...
There could be. Like he was talking about how he had to travel around to like maybe most likely appointed by the court in some capacity. But that was his job.
Okay, so
in the West, not every place had...
Could have just been the sheriff or a deputy even.
Yeah.
Okay.
If someone...
Okay, but that was the difference. So John Ruth... That was his nickname, but it was his nickname because he was a bounty hunter who would take people to hang, and Oswald Mowbray was the actual person who was hanging them.
Oswaldo.
Theoretically, excuse
me. Yeah.
Mowbray was the person who was actually hanging them. Okay, cool. That I'm actually glad I asked that because I thought I knew the answer and it was wrong anyway. So,
if you stop being an executioner, are you an ex-executioner or are you simply a cutioner?
Think you're a former.
You started cushioning again.
Liam, what's your last call?
So I have a couple.
Okay.
Remind me, because I might lose track, but it had something to do with your question about the nickname.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But before I get into that, because I don't want to end with this, because Shaggy's going to think I'm trying to steal his woke title.
Ooh,
careful. One of the things that I don't like about this movie.
Is it the use of the N-word?
No, I was going to say, no, I love that. No. No,
I knew it.
Chris, clip that out. Reuse that for later.
What? With an H?
No, obviously, like, there's a lot. And the fact that it's, like, almost as much as Django, but it's all directed at just one dude, it makes it feel more excessive.
Yeah.
But more so than that is the heinous and repeated ass-whooping that Jennifer Jason Leigh takes.
She kind of deserves it.
In this movie. Well, here's the thing, though.
She's a woman.
We don't see enough of how bad she is.
Right, that's
to
fair.
Really make that okay.
No,
to
that's
the point,
fair.
And it's so often and so at times random that it almost feels like it's being played for humor. And there are things there are things that you'll hear as a complaint about Tarantino is that he very often depicts violence against women. Now,
as funny?
Just period.
Generally.
Sometimes is funny, and there's sometimes there you can try to justify some things away, like it's somebody bad who deserved it, like the Manson family, like
the flamethrower.
Who's going to complain about killing the Manson family? Mm-hmm. Very few people who know who the Manson family are and what those people did. But when you kind of take a step back and look at the larger body of work, I think this is an indication of why that's problematic in Tarantino's work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it definitely is played comically to the point where she gets projectile vomited blood right in her face pretty prominently. Right.
Although that could almost be To a certain extent, again, kind of a nod to the grossness of the thing. Because a lot of gross shit happens in the thing.
Elements of the grotesque, check.
Elements of the grotesque, check. But it never quite gets to the point where I'm like, oh yeah, you probably should have just bashed her face in just then.
The only reason this isn't a horror movie is I do not give a fuck what happens to these people.
That's really fair. I mean, that's fair.
They're so terrible that I'm not scared for their safety. Fuck them.
Yeah, the only people that you know are like the pure innocents here are long dead by the time you get there.
Yeah, and we know that it's coming, and we don't fear for it because we know it's coming, right? Like, so.
So my other last call is that this is, again, kind of a ding against Tarantino, but like, I get it, and it's sort of fun, but like, it's just a little bit too ham-fisted in this, is the, this was when he was very much into his, like, legends phase, where, like, everybody had their own legends that, you know, and this started probably around the time of, like, Kill Bill, where everybody was like, oh, this is my name, but you might know me by another name, you know? And so, like, a lot of that sort of personalized myth building. In this, fucking everybody has another secret name, like their penis that Lauren knows their name. It's just like that, all of them.
They're Quentin Tarantino's hateful penises.
They're hateful, like, eight. And it just
where
gets
Lauren knows your
a
penis
little
name.
Bit excessive. That
bah, bah, bah.
The
everybody's glad you came. Bah, 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 bah.
But like, so you combine the idea of everybody having a nickname with everybody being low-key famous, and then all of the people who have nicknames and are low-key famous,
like Tom Hiddleston,
gather in this one place in the entire world. Like, none of these people are from the same town or anything, like, but they've all managed to find their way here to this mountain in Wyoming at the same time. And it just feels a little weird and hokey.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my other last call.
All right.
Writings.
I can go. I'm going to give this movie a 4. Nice. I liked it.
One for each hour.
I mean, not the one I watched. I'm giving it more than that. No, and I don't really have much more to say than what I've already said. I do. I mean, I try to avoid Tarantino movies just because they make me uncomfortable thinking about them. But then I watch them and I like them. I mean, so... yeah, hearing that quote from Samuel L. Jackson was really helpful to me to hear and to put some perspective onto it. But yeah, I mean, I'm not really a long movie person. And so the fact that I didn't fall asleep and I didn't check out, I mean, is a testament to it. I thought this movie was really interesting. I thought the performances were really interesting. There was a time when I was confusing the white guys, because I tend to do that. Like, there were a lot of people in this movie and sometimes I get confused. But overall, I thought Samuel L. Jackson's performance was amazing in this. I thought Jennifer Jason Leigh's performance was really good in this. Don't love the use of the N-word like so much, and don't love the woman battery or whatever, but aside from that, I thought it was a good movie, and so I'm gonna end up with a 4.
3.5.
Okay.
3.5. Instant dock of 1 whole point, because it's not a horror movie. You could show me fucking Citizen Kane and I'd be like, sorry, it's a 4. Like, I appreciate you, but like the sled, not scary. Like, that's unfortunately like the way that I work, because this is a horror movie podcast, so that's instantly docking it 1. The other half that I'm docking it comes from the pan out of the crucifix. I'm not kidding. I at a certain point was like, oh fucking come on, is this what it's gonna be? Like, at a certain point, like, I honestly, and I thought about this and I practiced this speech in the bathroom mirror for you. And that is that when we first started watching movies together fucking 25 years ago or some stupid nonsense, right? You told me that the mark of a good filmmaker is patience. And I thought, okay, that sounds legit. But then I was like, I don't know. I don't think he knows what he's talking about. Because then you showed me Gosford Park for the first time and I was like, fuck this.
That movie's great.
That movie is in need of a fucking editor. That no, movie it's needs perfect. To be redone by Michael Bay right away. Like, fucking, that's what needs to happen. Like, Gosford Park needs to turn into a big robot. Like, fucking, like, anyway. So, and then...
That should be a festival. I'm sorry to interrupt. Gosford Park should be a festival for your ADHD ass.
It
really feels, should. There is something happening in every corner of that screen and dialogue happening. No, it's not. The camera's moving the entire ass time and it's always picking up new shit. You should be all over that.
Okay, either way, right?
It's the rainbow road of murder mysteries.
If you'll please let me finish.
It just moves really slow instead of really fast.
Yeah, that's the opposite of rainbow road. What I'm saying is, Rainbow Road's whole fucking point is that it's fast!
But there's always stuff to look at is the thing. Oh, that's God. Why it's different from not the rest of the board. Not when you're
dying! Okay, so I started out with, I don't know if that's true, because you showed me Gosford Park, and I was like, I don't know that Liam knows what he's talking about. And then slowly but surely, you've slowly convinced me that you do know what you're talking about, because I'll see these long-ass, slow-ass fucking Phantom Thread pieces of shit that take for fucking ever to get to the point. And get to the reveal, and I'm like, okay, that was worth it. That slow burn, that was worth it. But every once in a while, I'll find some self-latent motherfucker that's like, you know what really good pictures do? They have patience. And then I will have to watch the slow pan out of Jesus Christ suffering on the cross in a snow for, I counted, 2 minutes, Liam. It is 2 minutes from I see the Jesus to something happening else on the screen, which is still with the Jesus, and then comes Stagecoach. It's the Jesus for 2 minutes. It's the Jesus. 2 minutes, the Jesus?
2 minutes of Jesus.
2 minutes, the Jesus?
I mean, it's really not normal Quentin either. Like, I feel like he was like, oh, I got mountains and snow, and I'm just going to steer right into this shit.
Throw a Jesus in there.
And yep. So, 2 hours and 55 minutes. It would have been 2 hours and 53 minutes without the Jesus.
I'm but you gotta have the Jesus.
Okay, you are biased.
Do you though?
You always gotta have the Jesus.
You're so biased right now.
Nobody Look, fucks just, with the Jesus.
No, I, so here's the thing is I love that shot.
Of fucking course you do!
I love that shot the first time. When you have to watch it four times, I'm glad there's a skip intro button.
Oh my God!
Over!
Four times the Jesus?
Over the Jesus.
The hateful over 8 minutes of Jesus?
So over it.
It's the hateful 8 minutes of Jesus. That's it. 3.5.
Jesus is old. -0.5 for the Jesus.
That's what it is. It's -0.5 for the hateful 8 minutes of Jesus. But yeah, that's what it is. What it is that like, yeah, sure, good films are patient, but that's not all they are.
Yeah, no, it's...
Jesus is patient.
Okay. Will you relax?
Yeah, he's been waiting his ass off to come back.
Right. Taking his sweet
Certainly
ass
not
time.
In a rush, J-Dog.
He just wants to see us all crash and burn.
I'm going to come like a thief in the night. You just wait. It's not that day. Ooh, got you.
Ooh, this is good.
I'm just going to point out that I'm not making the edging joke that I could make.
The gooning?
The gooning.
The gooning? Liam told me what fucking gooning is. Joe, I'm sorry.
We're learning.
Joe, Liam, do you want to go? Do you want to goon?
Yeah, I'm gonna,
Joe's our guest, so he goes last.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to do 3.75.
Okay.
I say just coming right in the middle of me and Liam.
Yeah.
Lauren.
Yeah, I'm going to come right in the middle of you two.
Yeah.
Get right in the middle.
You're in my spot.
That's right.
Get out of her spot. Ew.
I'll take it. I like
bet you will.
Every once in a while.
No, I'm going to come in 3.75 because I do like this movie. I enjoy it. It's not one that I watch a lot.
You don't have the time.
I'll make the time if I want to watch the movie. You know what I mean? And maybe this is unfair, but I like this one less in comparison to a lot of the other Tarantino movies that I love.
Okay.
So, like...
Do you like it less than Django?
No, I like Django a little bit better than this.
Okay.
Yeah, so Django would probably be a 4.
Django's phenomenal.
Maybe a 4.25, somewhere in there.
I've seen Django, but I was really drunk, so I didn't really, like...
Get into it.
I didn't really, like, what's the word, like...
If this had Christoph Waltz in it, it'd probably be a 5 for me. Like, I don't know, it's okay. Like, he just elevates
Absorb
everything that Tarantino...
Django, I don't think, yeah.
...does. But yeah, no, I think it's good. I don't think, like... And again, this gets a reputation for being like one of Tarantino's worst movies, and maybe it is, but...
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, it really does. This movie took a fair amount of heat. I think part of it is because when he is a little too into himself...
Mm.
Narrating
his movies suffer.
Mm. I mean, I think it's any director, you know, really. I mean, look at every recent Scorsese film.
But it's
really.
Especially noticeable Yikes. With...
Hot takes.
It's especially noticeable with Tarantino because you can always tell because he tells you what number of film it is.
Yeah.
You know, like when Kill Bill, scrolled up the screen, it's like, we bring you the 4th film from Quentin Tarantino.
So, like, yeah. If Scorsese Bill. Was 40.
Right.
And I know he's doing that because he said he's only going to make 10 films and then he's out. Yeah. So he's like kind of count
in his lifetime.
Yeah, he said that he's only going to make 10 movies.
Yep.
Wow.
He counts Kill Bill as one, Volume 1 and 2.
But
as,
this is
as
8.
One movie.
This is 8. 8.
This is 8.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was 9. He says he's doing
he's
one more
one
and
more.
Then he's quitting.
All right.
Yeah. And I think that supposedly that's the reason why he's backed off from doing the next Star Trek movie.
Oh,
because
right.
Because he doesn't
no,
really
fair.
Want that to be
he's
his 10th movie.
He's got to have right. yeah, something big.
So again, we'll see if that actually happens. But I know that's why he's counting it off. But also at the same time, I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Like, you don't have to say the 8th film by Quentin Tarantino, right. The Hateful Eight. Like, we get it already.
Right.
But, yeah,
just
so I
up
think...
Up his own ass a little too much.
Yeah, I think on this one, he climbed up there a bit. And him up his own ass is climbed still fairly a decent bit. A lot of times.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I'm going to go 3.75.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm tracking there myself because I was going back and forth between 3.5 and 4, 3.5, being, along with Shaggy, not a horror movie. Horror, maybe horror adjacent. I could maybe thriller. Move it there. But yeah, 3.5 Fright makes Pub sense to
close
me.
Close enough.
Yeah. Maybe horror adjacent. Like, yeah, if I put it in my rankings of my, of Tarantino films, it's probably close to a 4 for me overall. Because okay. just because the performances, I mean, it's, that's a ridiculous cast. I mean, it, mm-hmm. it really is
stacked.
And, you know, like every single person there is just, you know,
giving it their, I mean, they're
running yeah. hard, you know, yeah. And I love, well, I do, I, God knows, I love me some Walton Goggins. I do. So
he is great. He does that one character real, real good. Plugging.
Rolling? Plugging.
You plugging this up?
What?
Oh, wait, we're rolling.
Rolling.
You better
roll first. I only have one dick. How can I plug you up?
Plug. Pegging.
Oh. 569.
Nice.
Nice. 569 is Twins of Evil with special guest Glenn Peters. The Twins of Evil, 1971.
Ooh.
Frida and Maria are identical twins who stay with their uncle after the death of their parent in the shadow of Karnstein Castle, where legend has it vampires dwell. You know what? I claim it. 80% on Rotten Tomatoes with Peter Cushing? Yeah, ooh. Dude, let's fucking go.
So Twins of Evil.
Twins of Evil.
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 Call me Evil.
Now we plug.
Plugging.
That's dirty.
Well, thank you, friends, for joining us for another fun-filled episode of Fright Pub.
Yeah,
thank you, Joe, for coming back to
thank
join
you
us.
So much, Joe.
Always happy to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And if you guys have any opinions on Tarantino, The Hateful Eight, and its inclusion in our horror movie podcast, you should voice those opinions on our Facebook group, the Fright Pub Podcast Juice Posting More.
Juice.
Where Shaggy does Shaggy things and other people do other people things. And if you are so inclined, you could go on to the Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and a review, because that helps us do things. So thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time for Twins of Evil.
Evil!
And until then,
please podcast with...
That's right. Stay Friday, bitch. I win.
Sticky beans, 10%.
Sticky beans.
Please.
Stay sticky.
Please do what I'm not doing and podcast responsibly.
Stay Friday.